Welcome to Take Note on WPSU. I'm Addison Godfrey. Penn State professor Michael Barabe's book, Life as Jamie Knows It, An Exceptional Child Grows Up, was recently released in paperback by Beacon Press. The book is a follow-up to Barabe's 1996 book, Life as We Know It, A Father, A Family, and An Exceptional Child, which described life with his son, Jamie, a then 5-year-old with Down syndrome. 20 years after the publication of Life as We Know It, Barabe reintroduces the world to Jamie, chronicling his journey to adulthood. I'm joined in the studio by Michael and Jamie to discuss the book and life as they know it. Thank you for talking with me.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Michael, what made you decide to write this follow-up?
Basically, Jamie did. As he grew and as he not only exceeded all our expectations, but changed what our expectations even were, I chronicled some of his teen years back when I had a blog, and I did it sort of as notes toward, let's see how this turns out when Jamie is an adult. I didn't plan it to be exactly 20 years, but that's the way it came out. And by that point, Jamie was capable of helping me with the book and straightening out where I got some of the stories wrong, and also contributing his own stories that I had forgotten.
True.
So as you guys consulted with each other in the creation of this book, what happened if there was a story, Michael, that you wanted to include, but Jamie didn't feel comfortable with that?
Well, we talked about that a little bit before we started writing, about whether we could talk about girls and crushes. And you said, no, it's private. And it is, right? All we said is that sometimes you have them, like lots of other guys.
It happened. It might happen in my future.
Absolutely. We always hope for that. So, yeah, we try to be discreet about that stuff. But everything else, like Jamie's school stuff, Jamie's work stuff, Jamie going to concerts or museums, his experiences with his peers, that's all good stories, right?
Michael, you're a professor at Penn State, but you almost didn't end up here. You and your wife actually had an offer from the University of Illinois at Chicago that was better than Penn State's. You write that you took the job at Penn State because the opportunities for Jamie in the State College School District were vastly superior to anything in Chicago at that time.
Quite true.
What types of opportunities did State College offer Jamie that Chicago didn't?
Well, there was only slightly higher salaries. It was not a better offer precisely because Penn State was the local school district here, the facilities for Jamie. There was nothing in Chicago where he could be included in a regular classroom. Here, not only did they do full inclusion in Coral Street, and then you had some special ed and some inclusion in middle school. And then in the high school, he took French 1 for 2 years and French 2 for 2 years. But they have this awesome program here called LifeLink PSU. Because the services continue to age 21, a lot of places the high schools just keep the kids to 21. Here, they can actually take classes, not for credit, at Penn State.
Of course.
With mentor. And what kind of classes did you take?
The hardest one I remember taking was history.
You took tons of history. You took Martin Luther King, Greek, ancient Greece?
Ancient Greek.
Stone Age?
Roman and there's another one.
Medieval, right? Or middle?
Medieval, yeah, that's it.
You took all kinds of history classes. You took Tai Chi.
Martial arts through Weber's Forecast, through Donna Swords, Criminal Justice.
In the course of 2 years. And, that's a really awesome thing.
No, 6 years.
So there's really no contest. I mean, the debate about whether to move to Chicago, it would have been, in some ways, I put this in, I'm doing scare quotes, better professionally. But I thought, not only was Penn State a better institution, a stronger institution and a better school, but it was no question when we looked at what it was like for Jamie, this was absolutely the better place to live. The only regret I've ever had about that is we don't have an aquarium. You would be such a great employee.
You mentioned that in your book.
Right.
In Life as Jamie Knows It, Michael, you describe the difficulties that Jamie faced during his transition into adulthood, most notably after he graduated and was looking for a job. Jamie worked at Skills, a sheltered workshop for adults with disabilities, and he did some volunteer work, but you make the point that that wasn't competitive employment.
Right.
Why do you feel that competitive employment is important for adults with disabilities?
I can answer that by telling you about Jamie's shirt. He calls this a button-down?
Yeah, I wear button fans all over the press and everything, but the regular t-shirt for my Skills.
Exactly, a regular t-shirt for Skills, because that's casual work.
More casual, and
when you worked at Penn State Press at the booth of the Modern Language Association.
Well, actually, I started when I was in Houston also.
That's right.
Austin,
right.
Sorry.
But for that, you wore a suit. know, he
knows. I were too.
And you were looking good. So you take that job very seriously, I think, don't you?
Yes, I think I so do.
And remember that P word?
Punctual.
Punctual. Always punctual and conscientious and diligent. So you really like working at the press, right?
I have been in the press for 3 years since Tony Sanfilippo hired me, actually.
That's right.
Tony Sanfilippo, a former editor at Penn State Press, is the one who reached out to you guys about the cataloging job that Jamie now has. I know, Michael, in your book you mentioned that you think it's relevant Sanfilippo's brothers have Down syndrome.
They do.
Do you think another editor might have overlooked Jamie's ability?
I wonder about that because one of the reasons Tony called you in for an interview, which you aced because you knew about ISBN numbers and stuff like that.
I followed it for Tony Sanfilippo. He's the one I know.
That's right. But I think one of the things is that...
Somehow he moved to Ohio.
He did. He took a job at Ohio. Somehow he moved to Ohio.
Yes, I saw in 2014.
But the original essay, remember when the photographer came to our house and she took pictures of the lists you make?
Oh, right, the list,
Like all 67 Pennsylvania counties in alphabetical
order. Oh, my
gosh,
every county that
Or when you do the different cities in your atlases. And I think Tony realized this guy could really make a good list.
A full price, actually, he would say.
What's that? Right. And you could always make sure that you always check the books for the authors and...
Yeah, the authors and other...
So I think Tony realized... I think any editor who realized how talented Jamie is... cataloging and list making would have realized this, but I think Tony was especially attuned.
Did you worry for Jamie's job security after Tony left, or at that point, do you think anyone at Penn State Press could
Actually, after Tony Sanfilippo was another nerd got in mind.
Yeah.
Brian Beard, the next person after Tony.
Right. So you knew a lot of people there.
The press, I know.
I had my worries briefly, but pretty much everyone who's ever worked with Jamie has enjoyed it.
Jamie, what are your specific responsibilities at Penn State Press?
To stay focused and more serious, more computer time.
Yeah, but you have to keep track of all the books.
Keep track of all the books as well.
How do you do that?
Memorizing.
The numbers, ISBN numbers?
Yeah, this is the number all 10 projects I had to do.
And the titles? And make sure that we know how...
Yes. Zip code, everything else. I mean, everything I can do.
Right, to make sure it's called keeping inventory.
Keeping inventory is a word.
How does this job compare to others that you've had?
Well, I've been the job since around 2010, I believe.
What did you do then?
When I was in high school.
What were those jobs?
The phone job was Alpha and Finley Commons.
Alpha Fire Company?
Right. And
Finley
and
Commons, you were in the mailroom.
Right, and also the hotel one and the food bank and then Timbers Creek.
So, the hotel one was like you worked at the Marriott, the kept the food straight at the food bank, and you did...
And then Penn was, oh my God, was it...
That's the one that seems to me...
Craziest heat wave ever imagined.
Right, you had to work outside in a heat wave. And what did you do?
And I realized I had to wear boots. I never imagined wearing a boot in this heat situation.
Boots and long pants in June when it's 100 degrees. So I think we could tell Addison.
Yeah, I would definitely.
This job's very different
from that.
I
would have been deep fried like a calamari.
Yeah, you were deep fried like a calamari. So this is work in an office where you know it's always air conditioned or heated, and you don't have to deal with broken glass.
Oh dear. The other jobs was Penn Press. But also the hockey management and spikes and other things.
This is brand new breaking news. And this was his idea. Just this year, you are an assistant equipment manager for the Penn State hockey team.
Penn State, the men's hockey team.
He works all the home games.
The arena. I know people are still a big fan of Penn State anyway.
What is that experience like for you, Jamie?
A sportsman.
You're a sportsman?
But with the hockey team, you meet all the players. You know what countries they're from.
I met all the players in different places, like Finland, to Russia, to U.S.
That's right. So, yeah, and of course you work with the equipment manager, Adam.
Michael, why do you think neither job agency that you worked with considered these possibilities for Jamie?
Because they weren't thinking of sort of these intellectual sort of sorting tasks. And they did think of certain people-oriented things, like being a greeter.
Actually, but, I'm the big reader.
But a lot of the jobs were, like, one was a dishwasher, which is...
Oh, my God. I was in Otto's at that time. I remember having a beer after that.
Yeah, you worked at Otto's for a while, and you...
Then I had lunch there.
You also tried to work right here at the Penn Stater doing
Penn
setup.
Penn Stater is another one. I forgot all about that. And Giant also.
But most of all, they're thinking about low-level jobs. No one's thinking...
They also put me in YMCA also.
Yes, that's the janitorial one. That's the one I was thinking of where they're just going to have you, you know, clean the YMCA. Where there's a lot of other things you can do. You're very strong. And you have a fantastic memory, so it's a question of finding the right fit.
Yes, that's true.
Michael, for inclusive employment to become a reality, businesses have to be open to hiring and integrating individuals with disabilities.
Truly.
How do you think businesses could be incentivized to do this?
By example, for one thing, so that... You know, there's certain things like, for example, that his peers do, other people with Down syndrome, they work in food preparation, food service. And Jamie, I think, doesn't do that
food
sort of quick...
Food preparation was later, like Taproot. I started Taproot in May of 2014, I believe.
Taproot Kitchen does have adults with disabilities.
Yeah, so they do activities, the cooking, the baking, and other things. Like
but lunch hour at Subway? No, that's not going to happen. It's too fast. It's too fast-paced. But for things that involve, you know, either strength or deliberation or great memories or whatever, really with minimal job coaching, and the job coaching is available, a lot of employers, I think, would be very pleasantly surprised to find that someone like you could be a very good employee. And going that thing about being punctual, that's not just a joke about learning new words and stuff. He has never been late in 3.5 years to
any
job.
No, you're wrong. 4 years. Actually, almost right, but it's 4 years.
It's a pretty good record either way.
Yeah. It is. So
I've never been late in my life.
So, Jamie, do you have anything you would like to say to prospective employers?
Who might hire you?
They might hire me for some reason.
Would you be a good employee?
Is it funny to put it that way? Yes. I definitely will.
Would you be conscientious and do your job carefully?
You know that way. you could put a microphone that way, yes.
We could. And you would always listen... If you did make a mistake, like you did once with the locker room, you're like, okay, well, you only have to tell me once. And that's important, too, just as important as being on time. If you do something wrong, you just have to hear it once, and you learn to do it better.
If you're just joining us, this is Take Note on WPSU. I'm Addison Godfrey. Our guests are Michael Barabay, the Edwin Earl Sparks Professor of Literature at Penn State, and his 26-year-old son, Jamie. We're discussing Michael's book, Life as Jamie Knows It, which explores Jamie's journey to adulthood with Down syndrome. Michael, though Jamie is an adult now and has graduated from high school, the current Secretary of Education, Betsy DeVos, has rolled back many policies that outline the rights of students with disabilities. Even though Jamie is no longer in high school, how did you react to the news of these rollbacks?
By screaming bloody murder, basically. I mean, the Betsy DeVos has no idea what she's doing.
I started graduating in 2011, when I was in the hub in 2013.
That's why Jamie said 2 times. He actually graduated twice. He graduated from State College High in 2011, and then from LifeLink in 2013, in a world that, you know, Betsy DeVos knows nothing about. In
fact, he was the most popular, most gifted, most beloved man.
Right, but, you know, this is the thing about when you were growing up, even from when you were at Westview School in Champaign, you always were in classrooms with people without disabilities.
Oh, my God, that was a tough thing to handle.
Yeah, but you were great. I mean, and you learned from them, and they learned about you. And you learned all kinds of things, not only about your subject, but you learned how to be with other kids. And, you know, when Betsy DeVos had her confirmation hearing, it was clear that she did not know this was even a law. You know, she said, you know, leave this up to the states. No idea that the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act actually, deep breath, entitles every American child to a free and appropriate public education in the least restrictive environment, which means for you that you could go to school with every other kid. And when you had to learn how to remember the ducks you used to have in Westview School?
Oh, my God, for years and years and years.
So to get Jamie to know how this classroom is supposed to operate, every time he did something right, he would get a duck up to his name.
And over the years.
And if you get a certain number of ducks, you got privileges. And then you were very clever and you saw if you did something wrong, you'd lose a duck. And you were trying to put a duck back up. And I laughed so hard. Yes. You don't put a duck back up, but you do learn how to behave in school, how to deal with other kids, and the thing that we've been working on for so long, how to hang out. And, you know, the idea that we would ever go back to the world in which children with intellectual disabilities were segregated and isolated is just unthinkable, or it should be. And every responsible public official should know that.
Are there any other issues the current administration has raised for you?
Oh, press one for all of them. I think, one of the problems about electing reactionary people is that you actually do go back in time. You know, here we are talking about immigration in a way that was unthinkable until 100 years ago. We were still talking about, restricting people from certain countries. We were still talking about, we were still institutionalizing people with disabilities, especially intellectual disabilities. But yeah, the idea that we could, go backwards, not only with regard to discourse about race, gender, ethnicity, national origin, but with disability, especially with disability, these were very hard-won and recently won rights. And Jamie and I actually talk about this all the time.
Yeah,
this is how you can go to school. It's also one of the reasons he's so interested in history, because when he hears that African-American children were not allowed to go to school with white children, he totally gets that.
I'm definitely skeptical on politics.
You're skeptical on politics, as you should be, but you really wanted to find out about African-American history. Yeah, but you were interested in their struggle for freedom, and it's not the same thing as disabilities, but when you're talking about people excluded from school and excluded from public life— Yeah, so we have to make sure that people understand about that and understand that inclusion benefits everyone.
So do you see this as the next civil rights struggle?
Yeah, absolutely.
Really, really tough to have to say it that way.
It is tough to say it that way. But it is, we are talking about your civil rights. Listen, you have voted. You're skeptical about politics. You don't follow the whole details. But you were definitely watching what was going on, and you
had around the world. That means
around the world, and you had your choices, and they were your own, and you're entitled to do that. You're a citizen like anybody else. But what I describe as the next civil rights struggle in the book is that struggle for employment. It's one thing we've made such strides to get people to where they are by the age of 21. It is no longer unusual for people without disabilities to go to school with children with disabilities.
Especially like me.
Especially like you, to have friendships, to hang out like, the way people hung out with you in choir class in high school. You had the chance to have that kind of education. And you took it and you ran with it. And, we tried to help you out. When we found you were interested in art, we got you these books. Now you buy them yourself with your own money.
I have my account. The Bank of Social Security started before.
Right. You get a small Social Security stipend as a person with a disability, and you use it to buy food, sometimes for travel.
Yeah, groceries. We're planning to do food.
He's a very good grocery shopper. He has a very good memory of what we need and how much we need. And then occasionally you get some weird pickles. But, otherwise you usually nail it.
Is that a skill that LifeLink helped to build?
Not LifeLink PSU, but in high school, there's usually transition.
Explain to Michael about that.
Right. Those are called transition issues, to transition to learning how to shop, learning how to take the buses. And my own private thing was learn how to travel. Because on that first trip to Houston, as I mentioned in the book, he almost stepped in front of a shuttle bus. And then there's all the frustrations of air travel that people who do it frequently are very familiar with. And I wanted to make sure that, Jamie understood patience. And what happens if we miss a connection? And, what happens if we have to get a hotel overnight, which he's totally fine with.
This one time we went to the Dulles airport, oh, my God, got delayed it.
Indeed. At Dulles, we had to stay overnight in the hotel.
I
was frustrated. You were like, okay, pizza. But, yeah, now you just know how to get around in the world better. And, no, we are not going back to a world in which people with disabilities don't have that opportunity.
You write that Jamie has even done some traveling around New York with just his cousin, who also has disabilities.
I think that is true.
Yeah, this is one of the many ways that you can tell in life as Jamie knows it, just how much more independent Jamie has gotten over the years.
This one's for you. Where have you gone with Trevor?
Well, the Yankees games, and then the his place is like one such a place. I eat like 11 o'clock in the night. Who would expect to go to Japanese restaurant at 11 o'clock at night?
You and Trevor took yourself out for sushi at 11 o'clock. Then you also took Amtrak.
The Amtrak was gone through the Boston time.
To Boston, and you guys took Megabus.
Megabus also.
All by yourself, and now Trevor has a mild disability. He can pass.
He's He does have my own disability, like Michael said, but he does get around.
Trevor sometimes, you know, he might get lost, but he knows to call. And you've done that too. Whenever if I'm a little bit late picking you up, you always call because you're really punctual. And so you're much more independent, is really what Addison is asking.
Well, that's true.
Michael, it's natural for children to become more independent as they grow.
Yes.
But do you think that you've experienced that differently with Jamie?
Oh, absolutely. You know, in the first book, when he was very little, I described him. I said you were a slowly developing Polaroid of a child. You know, like you used to shake the Polaroid picture and it would get clearer and clearer. It's like that. And also, when you become more independent, it's very obvious, like the first time I didn't have to worry about you walking from the hub to Ilsang, or I could just leave you for a while in my office and go do something else and know that you'd be fine. And this new thing about you traveling by yourself, starting from that, it was 2012 when you and Trevor took yourself out to Yankee Stadium. But every parent will have that worry. But, you know, when it's a child with a disability, that worry is heightened because you're not sure they'll be able to report if something goes wrong or they might be taken advantage of. And so far that has not happened. One of the nice things also—
That's not going to happen.
All right. Yes. And it's not good. You're very careful about yourself, and you are very careful about strangers too. But every kind of independence, you know, being on your own more, working by yourself, traveling by yourself, mm-hmm. taking the bus mm-hmm. to work by yourself.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, these were all things we really worked on, and you love being independent.
Michael, when Jamie was in utero, you and your wife didn't want to screen for Down syndrome, even though an amniocentesis was an option. Why is that?
But this is a question before you were born. So you were still in mom's tummy, in the uterus. You're still a little fetus. And sometimes you can tell if a fetus has Down syndrome.
You know, that's kind of personal to say that way.
I know, right? It sounds kind of personal. But you know what they can do? They can do, it's called amniocentesis, where they find out if the fetus has anything genetically that's...
The DNA.
Yes, exactly. It's about the DNA.
Which I took a science older in middle school.
Right. It's about the chromosomes. So they can find that while the baby is still in the uterus. But we didn't want to do that for a very simple reason. You have to stick a great big needle in the uterus. Not everyone knows that. And it induces miscarriage one in every 200 times. It's a really invasive. It's a big needle, an invasive procedure. And mom, when you were pregnant, mom was 36. The odds of having a child with Down syndrome, 1 in 200. The odds of inducing miscarriage by amniocentesis, 1 in 200. Are you kidding me? And apparently, I mean, I don't remember this. Janet does. I said, well, it's, you know, obviously if that happens, we'll have a child with Down syndrome. She says, what if we do? I said, I would just love him all the more. An ignorant and uninformed thing to say, but it actually did work that way. But, I mean, people tend not to think of the risks when they think of prenatal screening. They also don't tend to think of all the things prenatal screening misses. There's no screen for autism. There's no screen for cerebral palsy. There's no screen for any kind of birth trauma. There's no screen for what they call pervasive developmental delay, which is another word for we have no idea what's going on. So I have nothing against the parents who do want to screen. I would never compel them to bear a child that they don't think they're capable of caring for because of their family circumstances, because of their other children, because of whatever. I really believe it's the prospective parent's decision. But I also am very, very skeptical that prenatal screening is oversold and that it promises things that it really can't deliver. And in this case, with amniocentesis, it ran the risk of not having a baby at all. I said, no, we want to have this baby. And then when you were born, once it was clear that you were not purple and that you were breathing and you were there, then I remember telling you, you were such a delightful child. You were so much fun and so silly.
Yeah, I've been silly over the years.
Yeah, you're still silly.
I've been silly since 26 years of my life.
Silly for 26 years and counting.
So though you draw a distinction between disability and disease, are you okay with those who do choose to screen for disability?
Sure. I mean, I think it's a mistake to think of disabilities as diseases, right? Because some disabilities might result in disease and some diseases might result in disabilities. It's not a firm line. But if you think of all disabilities as diseases, then you fall into this mentality of thinking we should cure or eradicate them. And there's no sense in my world, and if I were king, that smallpox, cholera, diphtheria, Ebola, AIDS, polio, these are diseases. They're eradication would be a universal species-wide good unambiguously. Down syndrome, deafness, dwarfism, autism, not even close. Not even close. These are fairly minor variations on, you know, interspecies difference. That said, you know, if Ashkenazi Jews want to screen for Tay-Sachs, I actually don't have the moral authority to stop that. In fact, I think it's a good idea. Tay-Sachs is an excruciating disease, really involving systemic shutdown over the course of 3 years and maybe seizure disorders and maybe great pain. As Emily Rapp, who the author of this wonderful book, The Still Point of the Turning World, about her son Ronan, who died at three, said, you know, am I sorry he was born? No. Would I subject that to him if I knew? No. And it's hard to hold both thoughts at once. But I think that's the kind of moral complexity that we need in these situations. So, Jamie, that means we did not test. We did not screen for Down syndrome. We thought, if a baby is born with Down syndrome, that's cool. And we were right. You made us. Yeah, it's your life that showed us and made us our life so much richer.
Michael, what is your greatest hope for the next 20 years of Jamie's life?
Well, do we talk about the that you be M-A-R-R-I-E-D?
That'd be my future.
That's one of the things we hope.
That'd be my future.
And we say it that way every night.
All the pendant people I know.
To a woman who loves you and would like to travel with you and be silly with you. And being silly is a really important part. That's the big one.
I've been being silly for 26 years of my life, in my heart.
And then one of the other things is we talk about all the time, you know, do you want to live independently, like in a garage behind the house that we could fix up? Or do you want to live like the way you have, you're
what
set up
you
in the basement?
Ask Nick about that?
Then the question I have to also ask Nick about his 31-year-old brother.
Yeah, somehow he got married.
Somehow he got married. Yeah, that's what triggered all this. You know, when Nick found himself with a good girlfriend, Jamie was like, "And what am I, a chopped liver?" Right?
I never remember saying that.
Yeah, no, you're a catch, man. And we just got to figure out, you know, which young woman figures that out.
I think Penn State people and students also.
The Penn State students know this, and again, everyone who's worked with you or mentored you or been in LifeLink, they all say you are absolutely. Well, they don't say full of beans. That's what I say. But you are full of life and you are full of good humor.
Full of life and sweet and sensual soul.
You certainly are.
Michael and Jamie, thank you for talking with me.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for the broadcast.
And merci beaucoup.
Yes, there's all that.
Michael Berube and his son, Jamie. Michael Berube is a professor of literature at Penn State. Michael's son, Jamie, works at Penn State Press. The book Life as Jamie Knows It was recently released in paperback. To listen to more Take Note interviews, go to our website at wpsu.org/take note. I'm Addison Godfrey, WPSU.